Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Heart Grapevine. My name is Matt Jocelyn, accompanied by the legendary, the iconic, himself, Smith Hart. How are you today, Smith?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You know, we got cut off from you in the middle of the show last week, and we had, from the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, we had Johnny Mantell and Tony Velasco.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock.
So we're back on the air here, and sorry after a technical glitch. Yes. So, Smith, you got cut off in the middle of the show last week. We had Johnny Mantell and Tony Velasco online. They were talking about the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. And then all of a sudden, halfway through the conversation, we lost you. Now, where were you at that point, and where were you heading?
I was in the, the Allegheny Mountains or possibly the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York, I think it was at the time. I was just going to ask Johnny Mantell about the headliners for the Wrestling Under the Stars, and that's when I realized I was cut off, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to interrupt by trying to call back. I just hung in there, and it was all over for me then. I didn't even hear anymore.
Well, tell us about, you just seemed to be, gone in 1 second there. So where did you go? What happened? What was the...
I just stayed there in case you called me back. I didn't move or anything, and I didn't want to disturb the...
But why were you in New York there, though? That was the question.
Well, I was on my way to the Ramones' 40th anniversary, 40th anniversary celebration of their first album. And the fundraiser also for their lymphoma. Most of them have died of that. And also I was going to see the WWE personnel in the building. And again, with the day before, I had 1 day to spare. So I thought I'd take advantage of the proximity. So, anyway.
Did you get to chat with anybody at the WWE when you went to the headquarters?
I got to talk to the perennial... Hot House Pansy Howard Finkel, and then I talked to Sue Aitchison, who was his goddess. She was so kind, and Vince, I was told Vince wasn't coming in that day, just like I was told that another time when I was there, and he walks around the corner, but Vince looking very debonair in a new flashy spring suit, and had some photos taken with him, and then I had lunch up on the beautiful rooftop of their Stanford, the WE Titan Tower there. And I didn't realize they had a view of Long Island Sound from up on the roof, but it was very nice to see. I thought it was a lake at first, but no, I was told it was Long Island Sound, where I was born in Long Island too. So anyway, it was a good time. They sent me back with a pile of gifts and for my kids, and then I went over to the studio and said hi to Mike Calabrese, who has been very generous over the years. And they're going totally high digit, ultimate tech, whatever it is nowadays. They're going that way. They're splicing. They're putting everything onto some new format.
Sounds like a good time back in the WWE. What about the remote?
I saw Ryback was just coming in to work out just as I was leaving.
Oh, really?
And went through a moan. Did
you have a chance to talk to Ryback when you were there?
No, just got nodded at him, and I think he knew who I was, and of course I know who he was. But as far as Ramones go, I got to meet the one of the two surviving brothers, Mickey Lee, and John Holstrom was there. He did a lot of the artwork for the Ramones posters and magazine coverage, and also album covers. And I guess he's high up. He's the head of High Times magazine, which we had some good laughs about the original Wayne Newton story in there. And then also at the performance there, I met Clem Burke, the drummer from Blondie. He's considered third best drummer in pop music after Ringo Starr and Keith Moon, according to Rolling Stone.
Even
and
above
also,
John Bonham?
Well, I don't know. Some people say, Mick Fleetwood was pretty good, or Ginger Baker. They're all good, I guess. But it's hard to argue with Rolling Stone. And then I saw another guy who used to do, he was like the roadie, gopher boy for the Ramones. His name is Monty Melnick, tour manager, and he's a hell of a good guy, too. And then I met all kinds of guys who had starred as Ramones in, TV shows or movies and stuff, Broadway films. They're actors. I don't know who they are, but they're real nice people. And then I met my old buddy, David Peel, who used to use John Lennon as his backup guitar player years ago. And according to Lou Reed, he was the, David is the, he's the grandfather of, godfather of punk music. He was way ahead of his time, before the Ramones, before the Smiths, and, Johnny Rotten and all those guys. But anyway, he's never ages. He's a perpetual, he's a pretty good guitar player, nice guy. He's, some kind of token executive for Apple Records, but real nice. Everybody was so nice there. I was so glad I was able to go, despite my sickness. I could hardly walk, but it was worth going.
Well, tell us about your health right now. I know that we've had a few setbacks.
I passed up on chemotherapy. It was going to be about 4 days before this trip to New York and New Jersey. I also went to the Ramones gravesite because the Mark that I was with insisted on, I think he thought some girlfriend from Buenos Aires was going to show up there and meet him. But anyway, I went. I had no choice but to go there, and it was nice to, observe their, their gravesite again. I could barely take a step some of the time there. It was pretty much constant pain. I should have gone for chemotherapy my first session, and I chose. The doctor said, "Well, if your hip isn't hurting that day, which was 2 days before the chemo was scheduled," he said, "let's leave it." So I did, and I don't know if that was a good move or not. But meantime, I'm going for a blood test on the 30th, and then I have scheduled the Roto-Rooter treatment, which is pretty nasty. They pretty much put me out, and then they stick some camera up my dick and pass my bladder into my prostate, and then they're going to probably ream it out or something like that, or cauterize it, or laser it or something, because I'm in great difficulty and pain. I can't function, and it's just the way it was back in the middle of winter when I felt I was going to die and really didn't care if I died, because it was, life was not worth living to me as it was. Started to improve. I started to gain weight, and probably I haven't really lost any weight since what I gained. I'm still not as heavy as I was, and that's no big deal because I was overweight. But anyway, to make a long story short, I'm hoping for the best. I need some relief because it's getting to be where it's very uncomfortable to sleep and sit and do anything, really. And, you know, I got a lot of guys that I want to train, and lots of things I want to do with my kids. So it's a nice time of the year up here. We don't get much summer in Western Canada, or anywhere in Canada for that matter.
Well, you know, the prayers of the entire wrestling world are behind you, Smith. I see put messages posted on your Facebook daily.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. I know I count that in big numbers. That's I appreciate that. God bless all the people that wish me well. It definitely helps.
Yeah. Well, a big question here right now. Also, we just had two anniversaries this week of two tragic losses that your family already suffered. It's now been 17 years since the loss of your brother, as of yesterday. 17 years since you lost him. Can you tell us what that means to you?
It was kind of shocking to realize it's been that long. And whenever I think of Owen, I think of his kids, because I haven't seen his kids in just under 17 years. We saw him, you know, we saw the kids at the funeral and at a tree planting ceremony, and that's about it. Martha, bless her black heart, has kept all the kids kind of away from the wrestling, wrestling period. It doesn't matter, the Hearts, wrestling, TV wrestling, anything and everything she associates with wrestling is taboo, which to me is not very open-minded, you know. I know she's bitter, and I don't blame her for, you know, begrudging the loss of her husband, that's whom she loved and who loved her dearly. But to me, she's losing a hell of a lot more than she's gaining. Those kids are innocent, and they deserve to know how great their father was. He was one of the greatest improvisers in wrestling. He could cry at the drop of a hat. He had, he was a very spontaneous person and very athletic. I mean, he was doing stuff that scared Randy Savage, and the office said, "Owen, don't upstage Randy. We got a lot invested in him and Elizabeth." So Owen was nice enough to tame it down. Like Ted, my nephew Theodore, he would probably upstage anybody in hopes of forcing himself into a situation, which usually he did, a situation where he got his ass kicked out of the territory or got his life threatened after the matches, you know. But Owen was a bit strictly business. Even though he was known as a river, he was always extra early on time, and he took everything very seriously. And I know the McMahons appreciated him so much that some of these theorists and conspiracists that think that he was deliberately killed, there was no reason to kill him. He was a very reliable, versatile, willing, member of the family, the WWE universe and family, or whatever you want to call it. And he could do anything. He wrestled clean, dirty, team up with anybody, and may carry the team. You know, he could wrestle with a blimp or a giant. I mean, he had Yokozuna as a partner. I mean, Owen was just one of the best going, and very good on the microphone as well. And he could sing better than most wrestlers could sing. Now, they were pushing DVDs and stuff in those days.
And another anniversary, tragically, this week also marks the loss, 13 years since the loss of your brother-in-law, Davy Boy.
That's equally startling just to realize that it's been 13 years since he died. I would never have guessed in either case it was 17 years for Owen or 13 for Davy, but time just never stops ticking, and not another great loss to the wrestling world. Both men were taken out young, and you know, you might say in their prime. Davy at least left Harry. You know, he didn't shut Harry out, or Diana. My sister Diana, of course, did not shut her children out from their father's greatness. I mean, I don't think he's even in the Hall of Fame yet, but he will be sooner or later. He deserves to be, as does Dynamite Kid and a lot of others. But Davy was, you know, some of the best matches I've ever seen in my life involved, say, Bret and Davy Boy and Bret and Owen.
Yeah, Davy Boy, Bret, Owen, all sorts of great matches.
Jim and Dart, one of the great tag teams of all time, Jim and Bret, and all those combinations, Owen and Davy, Owen and Jim, you know, even Owen and Bret when they teamed up were a great team. So, you know, it's unfortunate that some of those players are been, you know, knocked out of the contention, gone on to the hereafter.
And what would Davy and Owen be doing today in 2016? You know, like we'd have both of them would be north of 50 years of age. Likely, I would assume both of them are retired. But would they be opening wrestling schools? Would they be working for the WWE office? Would they be working for the Japan office? Or would they have just subtly retired and gone the family route?
I think Owen might have opted for the family route. He was very, you know, not that Davy wasn't family oriented. They both loved their children dearly, and I think they'd be playing ribs no matter where they were, who they're working for. They're both pretty adept at the practical jokes and stuff. Even Davy, I think, would come in second to Owen. In fact, Davy was. Owen wasn't really the victim of too many. He was pretty wily. He could smell a snare or a rib coming his way. But Davy Boy was also kind of mischievous that way. And even Harry, you know, there's a character named Sir Chisholm here. And Harry runs him ragged with ribs and stuff, you know. You just get other people to call him up with some. Like just the other day, Jason told me that many times tell her, Bret needs you right away. He needs a such and such. And she'd go rushing. She'd know exactly where he was, but she'd disturb a private meeting or a big loud argument. There'd be a fight going on, and Owen would slip out or find out about that and go tell some executive that Bret needs something right away, and or be a special taping that they didn't want to have any interruptions, and she'd burst in and have to apologize. But she always forgave Owen, you know.
Awesome. Well, you know, we have a guest scheduled here for tonight. We have scheduled to have your brother-in-law, Jim Hamill Neidhart, on the line with us. But we're having a little bit of difficulty getting through to Jim at this point. So we're going to keep trying. In the meantime, you know, I don't know if you've been watching or following the product at all. You said you were in last week to WWE headquarters, and
yep.
That sounded like pretty good. But you know, the big question I was going to ask here is, I don't know if you've been. Did you get a chance to watch the Extreme Rules pay-per-view by chance?
No, I was trying to watch it, but I couldn't seem to access. You know, I'm in a place where they got limited cable subscription here, or whatever. It's you get quite a few info channels, infomercial channels, and the channel where you watch who's coming in the door at this complex. But I did want to see how Natalie was going to do, and of course there was a screw job. So, but people like Natalie make the people that might become the champions that need that push. Without it would be nothing.
Absolutely.
So, I think she's always assured a position because she's always willing to, be businesslike. It's, it's whoever signs the check that calls the shots. She knows that better than Brett did, unfortunately. And, you know, I know that. And so does Vince. And, you know, so, you know, it's all good.
Well, the big news heading into the pay-per-view was that the WWE superstar Cody Rhodes has asked for his release from the WWE. This comes off the heels of Wade Barrett asking for his release, as well as, you know, Ryback, who seems perpetually at odds with the company. Seemingly Adam Rose has asked for his release. There seems to be a lot of talent within the WWE system right now that maybe are not happy with creative, maybe they're not happy with their remuneration. What are your thoughts on, you know, somebody like Cody Rhodes and the impact of him leaving the company?
Oh, I don't blame anybody who's dissatisfied with creative. Creative basically sucks, and I mean that literally and physically and figuratively and, you know, any way you can imagine. But, you know, I'm not privy to their financial arrangements, and I think that they're all pretty much taken care of, and they don't have too many options. But I think creative has always been a stickwing situation where you got a bunch of closet puffs from wherever calling the shots, and they don't know up from down, basically, in my opinion.
Well, Smith, you know, we had Kevin Eck on the line there a few weeks ago, and, you know, he gave an insight into the WWE creative process. And I think it's pretty true that, you know, like, although there are a lot of Hollywood writers that probably don't know their ass from a hole in the ground and don't really have much of an idea of what they're doing there, I would say the big problem, and I we kind of got it out of Kevin a little bit himself when he was on the line, the big problem, it isn't as much the writers as much as it is Vince, who may be a little out of touch with the product, maybe out of touch with pop culture. He's a brilliant businessman, but, you know, just may not have his finger on the pulse as he once did.
Well, I don't know about that. To me, he seems as sharp as ever, and I think he knows what he's doing. I don't know about people under him, but I think Vince has got a kinky streak in him. You know, he likes someone will pull his pants down on TV or introduce a big tray of dog shit or something to a show. There's got to be some kind of kinky warp there, but. And I guess there are some degenerate fans that like that to some degree now and then. You gotta play low key on that kind of stuff. But to me, issues gotta be logical, and the fans gotta be able to identify with them a little bit and understand them. You don't want all the heat on a referee, but a referee can be. Almost like a boss or a foreman or a supervisor where he's a real prick and can, or just like a cop or something or a security guard can give you a real hard time or he can be a nice guy. But it is basically a passion play, good versus evil, David versus Goliath, the bully versus, an honest, courageous guy, when the bully cheats and is a coward, and has all the advantages of maybe more experience and size going for him, plus maybe a manager, not to mention a dodgy referee. Now it starts to get kind of interesting where little David's not just fighting Goliath, he's fighting maybe two Goliaths or three or something, you know what I mean? And I don't think you need to get too crazy with, skirts and panties and a lot of bullshit to dress up these issues. I think the issues you just got to come up with new twists on them with different characters. Wrestling lives a lot longer than, it's like prostitution. It seems to never die. It is the hoor of all sports, unfortunately, but it always comes around. It has highs and lows, and right now it's not that high, but a lot of people appreciate it. Funny, all the Ramones, all these people I met, John Holstrom, are huge wrestling fans. All the friends of theirs that were guests at this 40th anniversary thing, and even people in the museum, they all love wrestling and know all about it. New Yorkers seem to really, you know, they're in touch with it. You talk to people in other parts of the world, and you know, they maybe come from some really foreign place and where there is no TV, let alone WWE or, you know, wrestling, and they don't know who the hell you're talking about when you say Bret Hart or Vince McMahon or even Hulk Hogan. They don't know him. So, but I don't know. I think, you know, I haven't watched wrestling lately. I just don't have access to it where I'm staying. You know, I wish I could watch it more often just to kind of see where how I can predict things and, you know, kind of judge things a little bit.
But you and I have bantered back and forth for many years. And, you know, you see such free agent talent on the market right now. Like, the first thing is, you know, like TNA, it's a miracle that company has not gone out of business at this stage. And by, you know, the grace and the skin of their ass, they stay in business every once in a while, but they've lost everything, it appears. And, you know, Ring of Honor, we talked to Kerry Silken a few weeks ago, and I had a great conversation with him, but in the end, you know, Ring of Honor is pretty content to kind of stay where they're at. There's not really a big merge push that as a major organization. New Japan, you know, one of the best promotions, probably the best promotion in the world with everything considered, but, you know, they're pretty content to stay in Japan. They don't even want to travel outside of Japan into the Orient. So, looking at the landscape right now, Smith, you know, you see guys like Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio, they're free agents. You know, a guy like Dave Bautista, CM Punk, you know, even though I'm sure that they got a million offers, they're free agents. And then you see the free agent talent market get swelled up with guys like Damian Sandow, Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes. And what do you think is the potential for the rise of a new promotion in 2016 or beyond?
Well, there's always that that possibility if somebody has deep enough pockets to kind of put it all together. I mean, the wrestlers' wages are a minor aspect of it. You know, they are the, you know, the whores and the promoters are the pimps. But I think that would be good for wrestling to have, you know, that might be the most legitimate thing in wrestling is having promotional wars. Because they would be serious, like Ted Turner against Vince. That was quite serious. A lot of money at stake.
Well, what, you know, like money obviously is the big thing. And, you know, like we've always said that money is, you know, the people with the resources in professional wrestling don't have the brains, and the people with the brains don't have the resources. And it seems to be
That's a real dirty catch 22, yeah, vicious circle.
You know, and then the joke in the WWE locker rooms and locker rooms all around the world is, how do you make $10 million in wrestling? You start with $1 million, right?
Yeah.
How do you make $1 million in wrestling? You start with $10 million. Sorry, I butchered that joke.
Yeah, well, that's sort of true. That sort of is true. They'll have to have some good, you know, matchmaking and, you know, kind of cooperative you know, issues and, like, you know, where people are, you know, you got to make the most of a person. Like, if he's dead against playing the role of a Nazi Arab, then don't make him. Or if he can't abide playing an effeminate role, then leave him to do something else or cut him loose. I mean, some guys just, you can play certain roles, you know, you can certainly change your, you know, from heel to baby as necessary, if, you know, most people can do that. But, you know, you gotta have some cooperation, some, you know, mutual respect for the combatants and respect for the talent brokers and matchmakers, bookers, whatever you want to call them. And when you get good rapport with, like, I always had good rapport with the people I worked with locally, wherever it was, Ontario or Alberta or anywhere in between, maybe more than I deserved. The hard name always carries a lot of weight, but I always felt that I have great ideas, and I know my brother Bruce had fantastic ideas. Like Don Koloff told me, quote unquote, that Bruce could run the whole WWE dressing room. A lot of guys would be gagging, like Brett, I know, would be, but he basically could, you know, like, you know, it's a big operation. It takes a lot of, you know, coordination for the TV and all that. But basically just with issues and, you know, I mean, I don't think every match even has to have a kinky finish or too much. You know, when I was wrestling, it was just get out there. You're giving us 20 minutes. You're losing or you're winning, and get out there and take, you know, do it on the cuff. And there's not a lot of maybe there's a high spot planned or something or some kind of finish, but basically it was you just called it on the run or just whoever grabbed the hold first got the hold. You know, if somebody's not being aggressive, he's gonna get the. You know, he'll be on the receiving end more than on the delivering end. But, you know, I think, you know, issues should be subtle and not too, you know, sometimes they're just too obvious and it gives it away. And they should be subtle and believable and tactful and, you know, not too far out that you're risking you know, fans' lives or wrestlers' lives or health. You know,
excuse me, guys. I have to break in. Sorry about that.
Go right ahead.
Okay, I have your sister on the line, Ellie. Ellie wants to come on the air.
Ellie.
Hi, here she is.
Hey,
Ellie,
Dr. Smith, can you hear me? Yeah, Jim. He got all confused. He wasn't sure what I was trying to do. Whatever his delicate condition is, you know. But anyway,
yeah,
so I'm here because I didn't want him yelling at poor Mike.
Let me introduce you,
quite
Ellie.
Understand.
This is my oldest sister, Ellie, married to Jim the Anvil Neidhart. I was the best man at their wedding, and she's the proud mother of three beautiful girls, including
thank you, Smith.
Natalia. Natalia's a sweetheart and one of the real staples of the girls' roster and a star of Total Divas. And she's one of my favorite girls of all time, both Ellie and all of her daughters, in fact. But Natalia, I see more often just due to her wrestling travels. It's good to have you on the show, Ellie. I'm sorry Jim
Thanks,
got
Smith.
Sunstroke.
It's good to talk to you, too.
I warned him about that yesterday, to stay away from the smoke and the sun, but... anyway,
yeah.
You'll be all right. You know, I wanted to ask Jim some questions. Like, you know, in fact, I found one of his plaques that I gave Natalia. Jim traded it to me for some pot years ago, but it was one of his junior All-American plaques for shot putting. And I know he was third in the world in shot put legitimately. And, you know, when you met him, he was just fresh from playing football. He just come from the injured reserve of the Oakland Raiders, and prior to that, he played with the Dallas Cowboys, the two winningest football teams in history at the time.
Yeah.
And he was an all-round athlete, even had scholarships for baseball and stuff with UCLA and I don't know, wherever else.
Yeah, Long
went,
Beach
but,
State and UCLA, both.
Long Beach, yeah.
Well, Ellie, do you mind if I'm sorry, I'm Matt, I'm Smith's co-host here. Do you mind if I ask? How did you and Jim meet when you guys first met? What was your first impressions of Jim?
Oh, you don't want to go there, Mike. I'm just kidding. He called my dad from California, and somebody told him about my dad and said that they thought that Jim was a $1 million product if he ever wanted to break into wrestling, that my dad was the best person in the world to teach him, so... He called my dad from California.
Coach, Bum Phillips, Ellie Bum Phillips, had taken him to see Gene LaBelle, and Gene LaBelle thought Grampy, my father, our father, could maybe manhandle Jim enough because Jim weighed 305 pounds at the time, was bench pressing 600 pounds, and he was quite a handful. My dad, that was right up my dad's alley, a big power, you know, aggressive football player. You could blow him.
A bona fide athlete.
Yeah, you could blow him up in about, you know, half the time of a normal guy because he was so full of confidence and power, you know, but he would let it all out at once. He would ride him like a, you know, matador on a bull or a bull rider on a bull, and soon he had Jim, like just like he did with Billy Graham, Superstar, and lots of other wrestling monsters. He's internet, Jim, squeaking like a docile little shrew.
Yeah.
Little mouse, you know.
Bonded just like a father and a son that was always fond of Jim.
And I know, I think Ellie felt sorry for Jim. Like, he was living, he wasn't making a lot of money, but he was getting the best wrestling training in the world, and he was living on cornflakes, and he stayed at the house a little bit, but I think he had some little rat hole somewhere, and Ellie kind of felt sorry for him and took him out on a dinner date or something, and one thing led to another, and soon, the best thing in the world happened for both of them. They married, and they had three beautiful daughters.
Yeah, 38 years now.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
We all know about
that's how we met. He came to Calgary, and my dad introduced us at the top of the basement stairs, and I put him off for about a year until Bruce kept asking me to please go out with him, and that the worst that I had to lose was that I got a free dinner out of it. We went out, and fireworks, and, that was the history was written. But, yeah, for a whole year I watched him come, through the kitchen, sometimes with Big Daddy. You remember Big Daddy Junkyard was a good friend of Jim's, too.
Junkyard Dog.
Yeah, Junkyard Dog took very good care of Jim. And Junkyard actually introduced him to Bill Watts' group, and then Jim wrestled here for about 4 years and then went off to wrestle in Louisiana for Bill Watts and wrestled with, Randy Savage and Rick Rude and...
Barry Darso.
Yeah, Barry Darso and... quite a few of the guys anyway. Nikolai Volkov.
Were you traveling with Jim and living in the territory?
Yeah, when we moved to Louisiana, we had our daughters, all three of them, and Muffy was, my youngest one was just barely 3 months old, so we ended up in Louisiana, and then Jim just traveled the circuit there with everybody that was down there, and guys like Ric Flair, he'd cross their paths once in a while, or Dusty, all of them were very nice to him and took him under their wing when they could, and Eddie Graham, and then he went back to Calgary a little bit, and before you knew it, my dad had set him up with Vince to wrestle for the New York Wrestling Office with Brett, and that was how they got started in there. My dad had basically compromised his territory to accommodate the, Owen and Brett and Jim and Davey and Tom Billington for New York, because he knew that they were good products and that they'd make much more money in New York than they would for him. So he basically let them go at his own expense, really, and that was that. But we still persevered in Calgary because we had a lot of other talent. But that's how Jim and Brett got really started in New York. My dad, gave them to Vince as long as Vince would pay them well. So that's how it, and they were good talent. So that's what happened. And then they became a tag team,
Another question I had for you is that, Natalia, your daughter, has turned out to be probably the best female wrestler of this generation, by far and large.
Yeah.
I think
she's the best girl wrestler in the world, myself.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's very many people that would dispute that. And obviously there's a lot of that that plays into genetics. I've talked to Smith multiple times, and he's told me that you, and even from Brett, I've heard that you are one of the toughest siblings in the entire Hart clan. Was there ever a thought for yourself to enter the ring at any point?
No. Not at all. It was, the only time I ever considered, getting physical was if I was mad at Jim, possibly, but that was short-lived usually. But, I never thought about getting into the wrestling. It wasn't, I'm an artist and just kind of went a different direction. But Natty learned how to do amateur wrestling. My dad taught Natty a lot of amateur wrestling. And then the Olympic champion, Christine Nordhagen, was also Natty's coach up in Calgary. She had won an Olympic gold. And she was she coached Natty up in Calgary a little bit, in high school. And so Natty came by it naturally from my dad and all the cousins. She just was in her blood. And then she had a really good coach in high school, so she just
Ellie and I both have common like my father was an Olympic wrestler, even though he didn't compete in the Olympics. He's on the team for about 10 years. My grandfather on my mother's side was an Olympian. He broke the world record in 1912 for the mile. Jim Neidhart was a bona fide Olympian, you know, qualifier for the third in the world in the shot puts, but you can't get much better than that. You're in the top, you know, that would make you a bronze. I don't know why he didn't compete. Maybe he got into wrestling too soon. But whatever. I mean, Natalia's got great lineage.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, and she's very disciplined, but she's also a very nice person, too. She's one of the smartest, sweetest people I know, and she's my daughter, but I would say it even if she wasn't. She's just a wonderful person.
She's a good diplomat. She's a good business girl. She knows, you know, that there's dirty politics in wrestling and a lot of homosexuality in pro wrestling and all that, and she kind of just rides over the crests and always comes up smiling.
Yeah, she's not a foolish barker, Nat. She picks and chooses her battles carefully, you know. She's just a nice person.
All my girls are,
you know.
Well, you've been seen on Total Divas alongside of your daughter. And would you be able to tell us a little bit about, like, inside the workings of Total Divas, is everything we're seeing 100% on the up and up, or is there a little bit of a show in there?
It's all on the level. They follow you around with the camera, and sometimes you'll be, get a little leery of it. But you've got a camera around you for, you know, 8 to 10 hours at a time. But I don't know. Interesting dynamic, you know.
How was that conceived, to Total Divas? Was that the WF's idea, or was it?
Yeah, WWF proposed the idea to Natty. She was coming back, actually, from Rwanda. She was had flown over there to believe it or not, giving out mosquito netting to, poor people over in Rwanda, especially, like, in these villages with just women and children. And when she was flying back, one of the people that she flew back with had mentioned the idea to her and said that it was just sort of a concept, but they wanted to do something with a bunch of the lady wrestlers and kind of showcase their lives outside of the ring and then in the ring. So they said, would Natty be interested? And Natty said she'd love to do it, and that's kind of what happened. And then Natty's good friends with the Bella twins, and they were on board with it, and so they picked the best bunch of girls that they had, and they all get along pretty well. Trinity
I like
from Funkadactyls, and you know, John Uso.
Yeah.
So they, you know,
I like all the divas.
Yeah.
They're all pretty good girls.
Yeah, nice girls.
No.
Actually, wonderful group. You know, they're like a sisterhood, really. You know,
yeah.
Even some of the ones that I didn't know that well, were all nice. But it's the same people that film the Kardashians. It's the same group of people, so we're in good hands with them. So.
No, that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
We had a Facebook question that was submitted for Jim, and I think it would probably be just as appropriate to ask you as well. Now, Natalia having all the success, she seems to always, you know, whenever WWE needs a backup, they call Brett, okay? And does it ever get frustrating for your family that Jim is not being asked to be in her corner rather than Brett?
No. I think sometimes it might get frustrating to him. I just sometimes he's difficult to handle. So I think that Nat has a few times wanted Jim to be there for her. But sometimes, as you know from just talking to him earlier, Mike, he's sometimes gets a little bit irritable and doesn't mean to, but he does. So I think Natty's more comfortable. Sometimes she can always count on Brett where she can't with her dad, you know. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say. She usually can, but every now and again, he gets a thorn in his paw. You know, the poor little fella.
Well, business is business, you know, and you gotta go with,
Brett has always, had a good relationship with Natty, so I know he'll look out for Natty like a big brother. So.
Yeah, that's true, and he has no reason not to. But you gotta go with. Reliability and stuff. You can't be chancing it on someone who's going to get cranky or, you know.
Yeah,
you know. He'd be too tired. Yeah. So.
A burr in his bottom or something. You know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then you know, an agitated bull in a china shop with a burr on his sack or something.
Yeah, little Stanley Kowalski goes a long ways sometimes.
Yeah.
I was going to ask also here, Ellie, we haven't heard much in the way of an update on Tyson Kidd, your son-in-law, and his health in recent months. I understand he underwent a very serious neck operation, a very serious break in the neck. Can you give us any updates on how Tyson is doing in terms of is he walking?
Yeah, he's walking. He's doing, you know, as well as can be expected. He just takes it one day at a time. He's, you know, doing whatever the doctors ask him to do and, you know, trying to just stay optimistic about everything. And, you know, as soon as he, you know, gets the okay, he'll, you know, do more. But he's just taking it easy, you know, strictly under doctor's care. But he's walking and, you know, he's got some limitations,
that's God,
you know.
Walking.
So,
that's a type of injury that you might
it was
not
a
want.
Very,
it might be a total.
Yeah, that
you know,
was a very close call. There's no denying
it.
But
if it was any closer, as I understood it, if it was any closer, he'd be basically a vegetable.
Yeah, it was the same. They call it the hangman injury, but it's the same injury that Christopher Reeves had. And they say only 5% of the population ever survive it, period. So for him to actually be walking is a miracle.
Well,
they said that it was like, to approach one.
Kid, you know,
yeah, they said that his physical health helped him out a lot. But, no, he's still got a long ways to go. And, you know, it's one day at a time. But he's a very upbeat person, you know. So he and Natty are a good, strong team. So we'll just, you know, just let nature take its course and hope for, you know, the best with everything, you know.
Is he hitting the gym at all? Is he, like, is there an expectation that he will eventually return to wrestling? Or is his
career? I don't believe he will. You know, that's hard to say. You know, I think that'll be between him and his doctors again. But right now he's just, you know, doing whatever they're telling him to do and, you know, just, you know, nursing himself, you know, whatever they're telling him to do, he's doing. But he's not doing anything too strenuous right now because he's under pretty strict orders not to, you know.
Well, we pray for his health, obviously, and, you know, obviously been a tough week here. We were actually talking before we got you on the line. It's May is just an atrocious month for your family. And yesterday marked the 17th anniversary of your brother's passing. And, and then last week was the 13th anniversary of Davey's passing. It's a horrible month for the family.
Yeah,
you,
and then Georgia's son, Matthew, he would have been, his birthday was May 17th. He passed away from that horrible flesh-eating disease in July, but his birthday was in May, same age as my daughter, Muffy, you know. So, it's funny. Owen's birthday was in May. Dad's birthday was in May. You know, Georgia's birthday's in May. You know, so it's a little bit of a mixed bag, and then, you know, to have Owen and Davey both die in May, too. You know, it's like...
Yeah, poor Matthew, Ted's brother, Matthew, my sister George's son that died of flesh-eating disease, he was a tremendous wrestling prospect. He was a pretty good-sized kid for his age and loved wrestling and was a good amateur wrestler and a really good kid, period. And what a shame that he was taken so young.
I think he was, one of those rare angels on the earth. You know, he was very, such an unbelievable person. You know, it's sort of, it's just too
really
bad that that ever happened, you know.
Yeah, I wish I'd known him better. I mean, I knew him fairly well. They visited probably 3-4 times a week at the house. But,
I think, I think if anything, he was a lot like Dad when Dad was little. You know, I think that he was a lot like that, a lot of Georgia in him, but, you know, he just...
He was a very modest boy. He wasn't a pushy...
he was a sweet kid, and all of his, poems and the things that he wrote were almost prolific. Like, he, you know, had one of the stories that he wrote in school was about if he, died, what he would do for his last, day on the earth and things like that. It was like a weird question that they asked him, but it was a few weird things, you know.
I talked to a psychic. Her name was Siva. She was apparently 13 years old, black, and living in a ghetto, but she attended Harvard, believe it or not, at that age. And she really had some kind of psychic properties, but I showed her a picture of Owen one time, and it was a group shot, I don't know who, of us, the family, you know, and she said Owen was standing away from everybody, like he was just separate, like almost like Paul McCartney walking with the Beatles. He was doing one in bare feet, and he was out of step with the rest of them. He had his left foot forward, and all the other ones with their shoes on had their right foot forward, something like that. And she said he knew he was going to die or something. She's tried to tell me that. And I remember somebody, Owen signing his name in blood a few times. And another time, my mother asked him to draw a happy face. And he drew a circle, and then he put some little dot for eyes. You know, they weren't very big, like a little shark. And then for the mouth, it just barely curled. It wasn't a very long smile. It just slightly curled, and it was down towards the bottom of the, you might say, the jaw or the bottom of the circle. And my mother said, God, what a mournful, happy face. And then he did a thing for, they did some Play-Doh, and they were supposed to do an Eskimo village. Like, I remember I studied the same thing in grade 3 or something. And Owen had all this white igloos and white snow and a few white seals. But he had, then he doused it with blood. He had used about three little bottles of red dye. It looked like a blood bath, like, you know, two stabbed seals or polar bears with toothpicks in their necks or whatever. As spears, it was more red than white. It was just 100% red and white. There was really not much else to it. And some people said there's something weird about him, but anyway, all I know is Owen was a great kid and a tough kid and a, you know,
yeah, very
kid.
Another yeah, very deep, you know,
yeah.
Compassionate, you
yes,
know. That's
yeah.
What Matt was like
yeah.
too.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes it.
Yeah, all the key to himself, I mean, except maybe when he was doing a TV interview, but he you know, but when you opened them up, it was depths there that you'd never expected, vast depths of spirituality and, you know,
yeah,
intelligence.
Yeah, he was, baby of the 12, but he could, out-wrestle anybody, too. He was a tremendous, wrestler, like God, you know. I don't think anybody, including Tom and Davey, were ever better wrestlers than Owen. You know, they were all,
Dean
too, the amateur. But, you know.
Dean was a tough little bastard.
Yeah.
He was the best looking kid on earth,
Dean
basically.
Was.
And he was feisty as hell. I mean, he wouldn't back down from a gang of Andre the Giants. He'd go in like a little Wolverine, and whether he won or lost, it mattered. He wasn't going to back down.
No,
he backed himself up pretty good. Well,
yeah, no, he was fearless, Dean.
We kept you pretty long here, Ellie, and we don't want to keep you too long. We appreciate your time here tonight.
Oh, good, Mike.
Question.
No, it's nice to talk to you. Now, are you calling from Brooklyn?
No, I'm calling. I'm in Toronto and Smith's in.
I'm in Calgary.
Oh, good.
And Mike, the producer, is in New York.
Okay, I got you. Well, I wish that Jim had been able to talk to you, but he's, you know, had some concussion issues, and I'm not even kidding either. He's had issues with short-term memory, so sometimes you tell him stuff, and then the next day he doesn't remember that you had the conversation, so unfortunately. But like yesterday, if you'd caught him, he would have loved to have talked to you and had a wonderful conversation, but... He's a tremendous athlete, you know.
He was quite lucid yesterday.
Yeah, no, he's got
today...
concussion problems, you know, related to too many blows to the head, and it affects him. Some days are better than others, you know.
What did Jim think of the Montreal screw job, Ellie? That was one thing I was going to ask Jim if I could have.
Well, my take on that is that... I think that Jim was sympathetic to Brett on that, but my take on it is that, unfortunately, whether Brett, I'm sure he would be mad if my version of it is that the promoter's the boss, and that Vince had every right to tell Brett to you know, drop the belt wherever it was, if it was in Montreal, if it was in, you know, wherever.
Yeah, the promoter had the right to break his promise, break his word.
Yeah, he's the, and he's
pet over another pet, and
yeah,
that's the way
and,
it is.
To me, that was, yeah, that was kind of a domino effect that started the wheels in motion for a lot of things. And, you know, our lives were never the same after that, you know. I mean, everything kind of, you know, disintegrated after that. You know, Jim and Davey stood by Brett and went off to WCW, and then things just kind of went in a different direction. But I think that if Brett had, you know, done what he was supposed to, maybe, and, you know, Owen stayed in New York for Vince, and Davey, Owen actually got stayed when Davey left. So, you know, Owen seemed to think that it was better to stay in New York.
Davey and Owen would have stayed teamed up, and maybe Owen would still be alive today. And Martha would
and then so, but no one's allowed to talk about that. We're not allowed to have any opinions except for Brett's, which is fine.
I'd rather get sued by mentioning my own brother's name, but anyway.
Well, we always get, I've never, I hate to say it, since that all happened, my relationship with Brett has not been a very good one, you know. And, Jim's always been.
I've crossed Brett's path many times, but Martha has avoided the whole family like we got.
She's never going to really have anything to do with any of us. I don't blame her. She's sees it differently than we do. You know, we're born into the wrestling business, and it's all we've ever known.
Well,
and
Owen took her, you know, you might say, from you know, from the ghetto to the throne, and she doesn't seem to have any respect for that. And you know, I think
she
she's
just
fighting her, biting her nose off, biting her face, and that's her kids are paying the price too, and that's not right. Mm-hmm.
I feel bad that I'll never have a relationship with him, but I've you know, it is what it is. But you know, that's a terrible thing that ever happened. But you know, it's just you know, life moves on, and so we have to kind of. Nothing was ever the same.
Everything.
It started with the Montreal thing, and kind of just kept on going. But I believe honestly that maybe this was all a destiny. It was all supposed to happen this way. But I don't think it was. You know, my dad was another person, too, whose legacy, everything about my dad was compromised, too. He's the bread and butter of our family, and not anyone else. He's the one who has made our lives what they are and has given us, you know, everything. And when he died, it was all disintegrated. You know, the stress that it caused my parents made my mom die earlier than she should have from stress, from diabetes, and my dad couldn't handle it without my mom. And when they died, it was all they got was this dysfunctional, broken family with a lot of heartache. And you know, we've tried to pick up the pieces, but you know, it's hard because we've got a lot of heartache that will never heal. You know,
kept everything together. Grandpa kept everything together. You know, everybody feared and respected him, and rightfully so, because he wasn't a dictator. He was just
he was a wonderful person. He was a very compassionate
person. He commanded respect, and
you could have been a bum on the street or the Pope or you know, an animal, and he would have given you all the same consideration. You know,
he's famous
just
for
one of those.
You know, the Western Canadian circuit wasn't the biggest with population and proximity of towns, but for what he drew and for what he paid the wrestlers, he was very, very generous.
Yeah, they all, when dad died, you know, all the people that were at the funeral, you know, all these wrestlers at the house, and they were all crying. You know, bad news, Alan, you know, and people like that, these big, huge men, and none of them was even holding back.
Mabel,
you know,
Mabel
it was very touching, but he was just... I just consider it such a, you know, we were so privileged to be his children. You know, you don't get to choose who your parents are, but my mom and dad were wonderful people, and we were just lucky that we had such a great childhood because of them. you know.
Yeah, my
an exemplary child.
Contracted each other, where my mother lacked, my dad had, and vice versa. And my dad came from very humble beginnings, but he was noble in mind. He was a noble person.
Yeah. He was.
Our producer, Mike, here, he wants to ask you a question, if you don't mind, Ellie, if that's all right.
No, I don't mind it.
Mike?
Okay. Ellie, I wanted to know, what was your thought in 2010 when the WWE inducted your father? And before you say that, I just want to say I'm a big fan, and I feel like your family is my family. I grew up with everybody, and that was my question.
Well, I was proud of the fact that they inducted my dad into the Hall of Fame. He was, deserving of it. But I wasn't sure if the Hall of Fame really did him justice. I think when Brett gave his speech, there was a lot of things that he never mentioned that maybe he should have mentioned, and things that he said that I think were more an inept attempt to be funny that really didn't come off the way my dad really was. You know, like my dad was such a, you know, I don't want to call him a saint, but he was, you know, he was, if you sat next to my dad or my sister Georgia on an airplane, you know, he'd be almost sitting next to Mother Teresa or God himself. You know, that's how I felt about my dad. And I don't think that Hall of Fame really wasn't, that the Hall of Fame didn't do him justice. I don't think that Brett maybe was just a little nervous, but I think he missed out on a lot of my dad's attributes, or how he took care of the wrestlers, and how he, raised 12 kids and kept, everything afloat when there wasn't any money to work with, you know. And, he managed to, keep the wrestlers all respectful and happy.
He'd always keep them confident and that things were going to turn around, and they always did. You know, he knew what he needed. He always built his territory around a good, solid heel champion. He didn't have ethnic champion baby faces like these big cities in New York and Boston and Montreal, Toronto do. But
I know.
You know, my dad was one of the few guys when he was alive that knew five generations of McMahon. He knew Jess McMahon,
yeah,
his partner with Toots Mont, and he knew Vince Senior and Vince Junior and Shane. And I guess it even maybe changed kids, even,
Dad went back all the way, since the 40s with the McMahons.
You know,
the
one thing that really upset me, actually, about the Hall of Fame was, I'm very thankful that your brother Smith gave me the actual Hall of Fame plaque that he got from the WWE from that WrestleMania. And the part that I felt really offended by was that you were actually cut out of the photo, Ellie.
Brett was standing right in front of you.
Yeah, Brett is standing right in front of you, completely blocking you out. And I thought that was just, they couldn't have done anything.
I
if they could have switched that around where you're in front of Brett, because you're not the tallest girl in the world. But anyway, I know Brett was standing on his tiptoes too, but... Anyway,
I was just
going to
say one last thing, Schmidt, and then I'll let you go. But, you know, I don't want to tie up your radio program. But when you're asking me about Dad again, there was a story, and it was true, with the high school principal. His name was Harold Charlo, and he had also been a ticket seller for my dad for the shows. And my dad was going through really extreme hardship with the wrestling, and he had taken on too many other things along with it. And he asked this one banker, and he had the house and the kids, all 12 kids in this big, huge house, which had been double mortgaged. And he asked this lousy banker that he had been doing business with for years, if he could borrow $500.
Gary McKay was the asshole's name. Gary
yeah,
McKay.
Just and
Andrew Grampy had done a partnership with All-Star Wrestling when it was long.
Yeah.
Your Rod Fenton and Gene Kaniski, that was before Al Tomko stuck his nose into it.
And I think Dad knew it was a risk, but he took it just because
it
was
then
a
we
disaster.
Had to go reapply with our original station, CFAC, on Reeder Road with Ron Chase. That's when we had Wildcat Wrestling. And Ron just decided he needed $1,000 cash, private, to pull the strings to get the show on the air. We didn't have it, but our old ticket seller, Harold Charlo, bless his soul, who was later our, well, I think even right then and there, he was the principal at Manning High School. He gave my dad $1,000 unconditionally, just said, here's $1,000. Pay me back when you can. Of course, he was paid back promptly once we got this new show going. It got on pretty good. We were back to our own self, our own entity.
Yeah,
own
Dad really never looked back. You know, that those were the times
playing.
When we had, hockey pucks for, you guys got hockey pucks for Christmas that one year because Dad would fight
the
rink and go out and skate. But I'm telling you, it was, the hockey pucks and the stick. The mom kept it all very simple at Christmas, but we had always these big, huge, wonderful turkeys, and Al Oman used to come out with the cheetah and visit, and we never missed anything. We thought we were having a blast, and Dad got that rescue toboggan from the Army surplus.
Yeah, the horrible toboggan. All the tread on one side was all worn down. It was a heavy bastard. It was pretty safe, but it was like it was a rescue.
It's safe for us, not safe for anybody who happened to get in the way of it when
we were all piled
in it. But
a big metal pipe, metal handle on it that you could have hooked a little Shetland pony to it and pulled it, it was this big thing. It would slide back down to the back of from the front, it would hinge back down like a big U to the back of the toboggan, and it would be lopsided. It would always go one direction. It would always skid to the left.
I don't think we ever felt like we missed out on anything. We had, when we came home, we were just
a
close family.
One year he made a sled for us, and it was heavy duty out of 2x6 fur, and he put metal rails on top of the fur. You could ground them down with a jigsaw or something, and he had all these tools in the basement, heavy duty tools, drill presses and grinders and you name it, lathes, everything. But I remember when I wrote it called Charlo, he treasured the letter. He thanked me when I came back from Japan. I wasn't even in high school anymore. I was pretty much in university, and I ran into him, and he said, that was such a wonderful letter you sent me, because I thanked him dearly for helping my dad out with $1,000. And even though
that was probably the most precarious time that Dad ever had. I don't know what would have happened if somebody else hadn't, it might have been a completely different story, and we might not have even had wrestling territory anymore, because that's how close Dad was to losing everything.
Mother, I know this guy was a stampeder. His mother, Maria Hansen or something, she was going to buy the house for like not much more than we paid for it in the 50s. It was like a joke. It was not that bad, this Don Hansen.
I remember that,
became a hydro seeder. Yeah, well, I know my mother was going nuts. My dad took everything in stride. He'd grimly deal with it and sit on it.
He, with all of it, he would still get up every morning and make the oatmeal cereal and make sure that you had, a meal every morning. You didn't go without eating, And then he never, ever burdened you with the problems. He was worried sick about stuff, but he would never let the kids know how bad it was. He just kept it all together, He and my mom, it was harder on her, I think, because she was more, open about everything, and he kept it, more reserved. But,
he was like one of these hazmat containers. He just kept taking it all in. He never let it out. He'd spare everybody else the grief, and he'd sit on it and endure it, and deal with it.
Yeah.
And he would never lash out and the way some people would, where they spank the kid or something or go nuts and beat the boy. He was a real, real, real fine gentleman. Like, they don't come much. They don't come any better than like Fox too hard.
No. He was one of the great people on the planet. He really was. But anyway, Smith, I'll wrap it up. I guess I don't want to keep your phone call.
Well, you're not keeping us here too much. But there's one question I was going to ask. You tell great stories about your dad. I've heard this from Smith 100 times, but I'd love to hear your perspective. I don't know if you were actually at the show. I understand your dad actually wrestled a Bengal tiger at one point. Were you there for that?
Oh, yeah. So I certainly do. The girls were never allowed to go to the matches, so all I had were the fine memories from the boys talking about it, after the show was over, and the pictures of, I don't know if his name was Mei Ling or Chi Chi, but yeah. And it had all of its claws and stuff, and it was, legitimate.
It
wasn't drugged or anything.
It had all its teeth. The wrestling bear was blind and
my dad was just thrilled. It was, you know, he just trusted that this had been a domestic cat, you know, that had been around its, you know, owner enough that the owner was telling my dad to wrestle with it. My dad was thrilled because, you know, his adoration of animals, especially cats, it was like he felt it was such a great tribute to be able to, you know, get this big, huge, wonderful, furry animal, you know, in his midst, you know, and I'm sure that it was one of his...
He was a much better wrestler naturally than the wrestling bear was naturally or even trained. I mean, this tiger had never been trained to wrestle, and the guy on the end of the chain was like a little black jockey. It wasn't even the trainer. It was like that guy did tricks with the tiger jumping through flaming hoops and stuff, and he'd carry a gun. But this was just some little cage cleaner black kid that they brought in. And this tiger had all as a female. But it wasn't neutered. It had all its teeth, no muzzle, all its claws. It was a young tiger. You know, the old wrestling bear was neutered, blind in one eye, had all its teeth removed, and it could still bite a finger off. And it wore a muzzle,
and still it did purple as a viscous finger, didn't it?
Snapped it right off, just the gums. And usually the bear was tired because it was never allowed to hibernate. It was that's in the winter where the wrestling action
sounds
is
like Jim.
Hottest. Yeah.
Well, you know, we have kept you a long time here, Miss Neidhart. You know, you've been a very wonderful guest, and we thank you very much for your time here. And we'd love to have you back on as another guest on our show. Another time, I'm sure you could tell us ages of stories of growing up in Hartford.
That's so nice of you to have me on. I'll wrap up now, but I'll just say, you know, I had, you know, there are 12 kids, but, you know, my brothers all took very good care of me. You know, I was very lucky to be in our family, and I couldn't say enough about any of them. You know, they're wonderful people.
Thank you, Ellie.
Okay, Smith, I love you, and I'll let you go now. Thank you, Mike, very much. I'll let you go. Okay, bye.
All right, have a great day and great night.
Thank you.
Thanks,
bye.
Ellie. Bye. That's good. I'm glad we were able to get Ellie. Jim was constipated, I think, again. But, you know.
That's all right. Well, I'm sure we'll have Jim on a future show. You know,
yeah, he's fine. He just he's got concussion syndrome and you know, sometimes he gets cranky.
Well, you know, I know our producer, I'm sure our producer, Mike, he has his own show during the week, and I'm sure that he'd probably love to have Ellie on as a guest on his show. So maybe he can help set that up at some point for him. But
I think it's a good bet to have Ellie standing by with Jim so that because Jim was fine yesterday, and Ellie warned me that he could just not be good the next day or the next day. He's just you don't know.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's good we saved the show with Ellie. So
Ellie's she's a sweetheart, and I believe you've told me a few times she's your favorite of all your sisters, there, isn't she?
Yeah, she is pretty much. Although Diana, they're all good sisters, they're all great girls. But you know, I know Ellie the longest, obviously, and she's very creative. Ellie is one of the most creative persons on earth. She made out of our sheepdog. She took the wool from that and made a couch out of it, you know, not big enough to sit in. It was a model for a project. She made some, one of her frogs was on display somewhere, and Dan Aykroyd's brother, who has a string of bars with the frog team, saw them and had her make about 500 of them. And she's just, Ellie can make anything out of anything, you might say.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, I was going to ask her one question, and I thought, no, maybe you're probably best not to, but maybe I'll ask you here, and just as a curiosity, you know, her husband, Jim, wrestled on and off for the WWE. He had a brief run from, 85 all the way through to, about 92, and then he was off, and then came back for a short run in 95, and he came back for a short run in 97. He had a little bit of a stint in WCW in 98, 99, and then back in 93 as well. But if you were to take the career of Jim Neidhart, now you see Natalya. She's had a good 10-year-plus career with the WWE. Has Natalya, no, I wouldn't say erased the legacy of her father, but has she surpassed the legacy of Jim, would you say?
No, I would not say so. Much as she's done so much for herself, a single girl, you know, and she's you might say, pulled TJ through the opportunity she's had as well. Like, you know, he's enhanced her and she's enhanced him. And I think Davey Boy Smith Jr., the, you know, Davey's son, Harry, helped the cause there to start with. But it's very hard to, when you consider those matches that and Brett had against the British Bulldogs and various other teams, it's really hard to top that. Like, I really
well, you know, you could say that, but then you could also look at the matches. You know, the last two haven't been as good, but the matches that Natalya's had with Charlotte have been some of the best ladies' matches in the history of the sport. And she is redefining women's wrestling. I have all the love and respect in the world for Jim Neidhart. You and I have gone and partied with him. You were the best man at his wedding. I've had great times with Jim on the road myself. It's, you know, there's no taking away from the fact that he's a definite Hall of Fame contender. But the, you know, with regards to Natalya, like, she has really redefined the sport. But, you know, like, they call it a Divas Revolution. Like, she has really been at the epicenter of that right from the beginning.
Yeah, she has. She's kind of, you know, she's a behind-the-scenes kind of, you know, I wouldn't say mascot, but like team leader, squadron leader. You know, I think the girls all count on her for solid advice and, you know, cooperation. You know, she's the one that will, you know, do the honors for somebody and knows that that's the name of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know.
I would say with the exception of Stephanie McMahon and maybe Lillian Garcia, she's the longest reigning female in that company, which as a wrestler is just absolutely astonishing. And, you know, it's
yeah,
a few questions, but, you know, we're very thankful for your sister Ellie to be on the show, a last minute replacement. Very thankful for that. And had another great show. Smith, you got anything on the go this week that you want to promote? Anything that's going on here? Other than, you know, doctor's appointments and health checkups?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I appreciate the opportunity to interject that. We've got a really good show coming up on the 29th at the Sports Bar on 64th Avenue and Center Street Northeast. And it's not a huge venue, so people should get their tickets early. But my son Matthew has teamed up with Renegade against a very formidable team of Zach Mercury and Heavy Metal, and then we're introducing some real monsters. We got a 300-pound Irishman. We've got Cato, who's a really good all-around wrestler, a really nice kid, and also Massive Damage. He's a big biker. He was one of the guys staying at Brett's when Ken Shamrock and Mark Henry and Kurgan and Glenn Culkin were all being trained with Brett and Leo Burke. And I'm looking forward to seeing him. He's apparently a fairly rough, tough guy and big guy. And, you know, this Kenny Johnson, one of our local guys that we took pride in years ago, he's emerged now, but he seems to have a chip on his shoulder. He got very stroppy when we introduced him. And Rick Titan was amazed how bitter he was. He said the Hearts never gave him a break. And, you know, we let, you know, Chris Benoit in, and like as if it was, I mean, it wasn't really our decision. Brian Pillman, all these guys that filled upon that got into the WWE. Well, Kenny maybe just didn't step up to the plate. I don't know, but he seems to be very bitter. But he's, you know, he's not that old, you know, and he's got some kind of Hulk Hogan complex. But anyway, I think it's going to be a great card at the Sports Bar on 64th Avenue and Center Street Northeast this Sunday at 5.
Yeah.
I think it's, and then we got a big show coming up, Stampede Week, at the Ranchman's in a tent. It'll go away and probably draw 1,000 people. And we got some WWE guys coming in for that, like some retired, like, you know, Chris Masters, and maybe, I'm not sure if Chavo Guerrero has been approached yet, but Harry thought that would be a good addition to the card. He'd even fight either one of those guys, he thought. And Harry will be on the card himself, Stampede Week, July 10th. But that's just some of the stuff that's coming up.
We'll have to have Harry on the show to talk about that at some point. And I also wanted to let you know, and just a little off top, going back to your show there, a friend of mine from here in Ontario has actually moved to Calgary. He's a former, he's a wrestler. He's had a few years off, but he's looking to get back in the game, and he said he's going to be showing up at your show this Sunday. And I'll tell you, his name is Waylon Jimmy Handjob, and he actually trained at the same time as Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens in the same class with them. So he has as good a skill as those two. He's a very talented wrestler. I'll even go on record to say one of the best matches I ever had in my short-lived career was wrestling against Waylon Jimmy Handjob at a show in Huntsville about 2003, 2004-ish. But, he's a good hand, and he told me he's going to be showing up at the Heart Legacy Wrestling this Sunday, and he's hoping to get involved and maybe, get his get back in the game.
Yeah, looking forward to getting his ass whipped. I've been wanting to meet little Jimmy for a long time.
Well, there you go. Well, he'll be at the show this Sunday. And, it sounds like a good, fun time for the fans and the friends. Your health, that's another concern. Hopefully,
there's going to be some drink specials on, too, like the heart pitchers. And if they, get a jug for half price and stuff. I don't know what they all are, but there was a good talk about that for the people that are more into the drinking than, sports entertainment. But it's our first time there, and I'm looking forward to a good time.
Yeah. Well, we got a couple other guests coming up in the next few weeks. We have a few people that we've discussed about having on the show, like the Cuban Assassin and your nephew Harry, which we just discussed. Hugo Savinovich will still be making an appearance at some point, and we've also had
another one where I was the best man at his wedding with Wendy Richter also.
Absolutely. And Abdullah the Butcher is another one we've discussed about having on as well. So, some good things coming out of a Heart Grapevine coming up in the next few weeks. And also want to send a special thank you out to our lead sponsor, ProWrestlingTees.com. Go check them out. And Smith, I just want to say, we wish you the best. Hope your health starts to improve again. The thoughts and prayers of a million wrestling fans around the world are with you, okay?
Well, I really appreciate that, especially because I feel so kind of lousy. I'm really not feeling too good. So, I thought I was making a complete, some kind of recovery. I thought if it just stayed that way, I could live with the discomfort. But it's gone beyond discomfort. It's got quite painful. So I got to go for more checkups and surgery, and maybe I'll hit the church too again. I am a good Mormon, don't forget, as are you, brother Matthew.
Yeah. Anyways, for this week, I want to say thank you to everybody, and thank you to your sister Ellie. It's been a great treat. God bless and good night.
Good night. Thank you.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson from TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart family dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m., Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira returns to the airwaves to cover professional wrestling news, results, and more. At 8 p.m., Totally Driven Radio, the show that started it all, brings you the best in topical conversations, celebrity interviews, exclusive musical guests, and so much more. Your Friday night would be incomplete without a trip to Uncle Shawnee's Playground. Join Uncle Shawnee at 8 p.m. and prepare to be offended, but, you know, in a good way. At 10 p.m., don't forget the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., the Mojo Sports Show starts your weekend off with a healthy dose of sports mojo. Get the latest news, scores, results, and more every Saturday morning. At 9 p.m., Totally Driven Radio rocks. Bay Ragney unleashes his inner beast as he takes you on a heavy metal journey and looks at the music he thinks rocks. That brings us to Sunday morning, the perfect time for a big weenie. At 10 a.m., the Big Weenie Castanini Show goes live around the world. And ending the week at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, join the TV Nation for your weekly dose of the Nerd Herd and talk all things comics, TV, movies, and pop culture. Remember, get driven, stay driven.